Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you, one and all, for being with us, taking a part of your week, and listening to the show, wherever you are, whenever you are, because people tune in to the podcast and the streams from all over the world, which is just so cool. It's so exciting and so cool. My guest tonight is Barbara Handclaw, who just wrote a book, Revelations of the Ruby Crystal, which is really fascinating. And she has a really broad background that I want to hear about also. So we will be with her in a few minutes, but first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And I've whined about the weather on this show for 4.5 years. So you guys have heard the bad weather in New England and all the other stuff. And I don't like weather that hurts. I don't like weather that's so cold that my skin hurts. I don't like weather that's so hot that my skin hurts. I've been there, done that. I'm old enough that I don't have anything to prove to myself. But the other end of that is the weather that just is very special to me personally. And one of the things, besides just not being incredibly humid, which occasionally happens around here, but on a dry, sparkling, clear day, the thing that really gets me in a very special way is a breeze. Just a light wind blowing through the window or sitting out on the porch or going for a walk is very special for me. Why? I'm not sure. I remember, those many years ago when I was a lifeguard, the days that I enjoyed the most were the days that other people complained about because it was a cloudy day when there was almost nobody on the beach. Cloudy day with a bit of a stiff breeze coming off the ocean and the waves and the seabirds and just sitting there and enjoying all of it without a whole lot of people to worry about. And of course, the breeze is different in different places and it smells different in the woods than it does at the ocean. But for me, a breeze is very, very special. It makes a difference to me in a very emotional way. And so tonight I just want to encourage you to think about the things that, the kinds of weather that make you happy. What is it about the weather that just either gives you the giggles or makes you feel loved or just makes you deeply happy? For me, it's a breeze and weather that isn't too hot or too cold. For other people, it could be being in the sun at the beach. For some people, it's thunderstorms. I like thunderstorms, especially if I'm someplace safe and dry. So think about that. The power of nature is something that most of us living in the modern, in quotation marks, world, separated in many ways from nature and from weather, really don't get a chance to enjoy in that way. I have a friend who lives in Georgia, and I say, hey, how's the weather down there today? He says, I don't know. My house is air-conditioned. My car is air-conditioned. I park in the air-conditioned garage. I go up in the air-conditioned elevator to my air-conditioned office. I don't know what the weather is. It's hot and humid when I, you know, for the walks in between things and rolling down my window to get something at the drive-thru, but I don't really know. It's just another summer day. And I totally understand that. And it's a hot, humid place. So air conditioning is a wonderful thing. But on the other hand, it's a real separation from the earth and weather and part of what makes us human. We've really dissociated from that. So for me, it's breezes. Figure out what it is for you, or you may know exactly what it is for you. Maybe it's a very light drizzle. Maybe it's, I don't know, whatever it is for you. And take some time to get that in your life and enjoy that. It's very, very special. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing. I figured if I couldn't talk about anything else, I'd talk about the weather, right? And let's meet tonight's guest, Barbara Handcloud. Barbara, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
I saw some information about your book and started reading it. I didn't get to all the way through it. It's really fascinating. But where I always start the conversation with my guests is, what's your journey, your story, your walkabout? How did you wind up with the knowledge and in this place in your life that you're doing this? You know, what's your story?
Yeah, well, I always wanted to start to write fiction, starting in my late teens. And as I looked at the field and the types of books that were being published, I really like English literature, and I really like good literature, good novels, mm-hmm. and good writing. And as I looked at the local scene with the kind of violent, kind of male-dominant, crime-oriented literature that was being published, I felt that I couldn't succeed as a writer in the field. And so first I went into nonfiction. And the first nonfiction book that I wrote, called Eye of the Centaur, is actually a very literary book, but it's based on past life regression under hypnosis. And mm-hmm. what I did with that book was I did 30 sessions under hypnosis with a really great therapist. And then I took those 30 sessions and made a book out of it. And so it had literary qualities just because it was storytelling. And so I continued to really want to write fiction, but I couldn't figure out how I could succeed at it. And so I ended up writing, I think, about 15 nonfiction books, six or seven of which are very popular still. And they're all in print. I've actually done quite well as a writer. And then in the middle of that experience, I also was a publisher for 20 years. I was the acquisitions editor for Bear & Company, which is in Rochester, Vermont, the publisher of this book. And you probably know all about those guys. And our company, Bear & Company, was located in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And so my husband and I ran Bear & Company and raised our family in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And then we sold the company in 2000. And then at that point, I was able to go into writing and teaching full-time, which was actually a very good thing for me. And then when I was 1 year shy of my 70th birthday 3 years ago, I decided it was time to do what I want to do. And at that point, I had enough name recognition and enough publishing experience so that if I wrote a novel, it would be published and taken seriously. And so what you really have in your hands with Revelations of the Ruby Crystal is the thing that matters to me the most in this lifetime. And I'm very happy with it. The publisher did a wonderful job. And it looks like people are really going to enjoy it. And that's what I hope for, of course.
Well, you've got this broad background, including studying the Mayan calendar, which for so many people as the end of 2012 approached, became a fascinating thing that most people didn't understand but kind of freaked out about. So how did you wind up involved in all of that?
Well, in my case, I'm part Cherokee. So my background from an educational point of view is I received a very a classical Western education, intellectual education that went all the way through to a master's in theology. But the other part of me is Native American and very magical. And and when I went to Bear & Company, as a matter of fact, I founded a Native American line there. That was one of the reasons I ended up there. And so I would say, what was your question, David? I got distracted for a second. You were just...
Well, it was about researching the Mayan calendar.
Oh, yeah, right back to the Mayan calendar. Yeah. So as a Native American person with a Native American background, I was very aware of the Mayan calendar issues that were developing back in the 1960s and the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And then when I became the acquisitions editor at Bayer, and company. We published the main Mayan works at that time, John Major Jenkins' book, Maya Cosmogenesis, and Jose Arguelles' The Mayan Calendar. And so I just naturally gravitated into it. And really the best thing about my life has been that by being a publisher and also a writer, when I'm interested in something, I can research it and then write about it. And so right. back in 2004, I ran into the work of Carl Johan Kalman, the Swedish biologist, who mm-hmm. is working more with the 2011 date than the 2012 date. And I believe that he is one of the most important decoders of the Mayan code. So I wrote a book of the Mayan calendar. So I wrote a book called The Mayan Code, which was based on the research of Carl Johan Kalman. And so in the 2011-2012 debate that went on, I was not very popular because everybody was working with 2012. And yet for me, both dates are important. And this right. issue is explored in Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. And by the way, this book is the first book in a trilogy. So there's going to be two more books
Great.
Coming. And I'm working on the sequel right now. And one of the key issues in this trilogy is dealing with the whole question of 2011, 2012, because I think something really big happened. I think reality has been fundamentally changed at the time of the end of the Mayan calendar. And somehow people 1,000, 2,000 years ago knew about that date and knew about this moment in time, which I think is utterly fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. And I know the confirmation of that for me and a number of my colleagues that do the same kind of remote clearing work that I do is that for the first 3 or 4 months of 2013, that first quarter of the end of that winter, mm-hmm. we all felt like we had fibromyalgia.
I know. Wasn't that amazing? I can remember that period so clearly, like from the December 21st, 2012, through about April, more like May,
yeah.
June. Yeah, fibromyalgia is a good description for that.
It was like sudden onset fibromyalgia. Everything hurt. We were exhausted. Brain fog. Unable to focus. I tried to refer somebody because I couldn't work, which, you know, when you're mm-hmm. a one-man show is not very good.
Right, that's true.
And, you know, but I had somebody that needed a clearing, and I was going to refer it to a friend in Colorado, and I sent her a message, and she was like, oh, absolutely not, I can't move. And I was like, good.
it's not me. And something really happened, and I think it's wonderful to kind of tune into that moment in time back in the winter of mm-hmm. 2013. And the only thing that could explain what we were all feeling about is that something that's fundamental to our reality was gone. It was like we were in a state of shock, you know, like maybe the kind of feeling of shock that a person has after they've been in the middle of a catastrophe of some kind.
Right.
And yet
right.
the world wasn't ending, and the world hasn't gone away, and I never thought it would, no matter what. But yeah, something has changed very fundamentally, and that's why I'm devoting basically 10 years of my life here to trying to really get a handle on that, because I think we need to understand what's happening to us in order to, first of all, survive and grow, and also, I think, to take advantage of a really incredible opportunity.
Right. Right, absolutely. What I found, and some of my other friends and colleagues, is that we've become more sensitive both to lunar cycles with a similar kind but not as dramatic reaction to it of not feeling particularly well and being foggy, mm-hmm. But also solar flares, which are very, very active in the past year, are affecting people. And everybody's being affected. It's just most people don't associate it with there being anything going on. They just think they're having a bad day.
Yeah, yeah. So what you're suggesting is that you discovered that you were more sensitive to astrology, you know, astrological influences, planetary, cosmological influences. And I also noticed that. And I think that has come closer to us. I think there's two reasons why we're more sensitive. First one is that the fundamental factor that the Mayan calendar was tracking ended, so that left a lot of space in the field to pick up on the other things that we're in touch with. Then I also think, and by the way, this is an idea that I'm just cooking up right now talking to you on the phone. I'm also, in the trilogy, I'm also working with the end of the Age of Pisces and the transition into the Age of Aquarius, because I also mm-hmm. think that that's a very big factor right now. And I think when the Mayan calendar ended, I think that transition it has become more dramatic. And so what you've made me think about by bringing up this issue of astrology is that I wonder if people are more sensitive to astrology and cosmological factors when we come to the end of one age and we move into the next one. Certainly I've found evidence for that in the last age transition was out of the age of Aries into Pisces, which is back around 200 to 100 BC, just before the time of Christ on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we have huge evidence of how totally obsessed people were with all kinds of cosmological issues when we look at the theology of the Gnostics, for example. So it could be that as we approach this movement into Aquarius out of Pisces, and of course Aquarius, and that's another thing altogether, Aquarius rules astrology. But still I see the same evidence for this kind of influence 2,200 years ago.
Fascinating, because that's not part of my background, tracking the astrological stuff. As you know, one of my jokes is I don't speak astrology. It just was never a language I learned.
Yeah, but you're talking about the moon.
Right, right.
But In other words, I'm putting all of these factors in solstices, equinoxes, the moon, and
right.
everything. And so
right.
it's just a question of whether we're influenced emotionally, and I think that you obviously know that. You may not have studied it, but you know it. And then
right. My perspective is more from a shamanic perspective of mm-hmm. cycles of nature rather than what I see as a technical way of looking at it in astrology, which is studying the detail of it. But one of the things that seems to be going on as the frequency of the planet rises, everybody is getting a healing all the time. It's as if people are getting Reiki treatments 24/7. And so everybody is changing and their sensitivity is changing, but most people have no idea what's going on.
That's true, yeah.
And so I have clients that, you know, tell me whatever stories, and I go, yeah, that's going on for everybody. It's just not a conversation you ever have. But if you start asking your other friends that are sensitive, I think you'll find that this is going on for everybody you know. One of the statistics I just saw was there's a base resonance frequency for the planet, which used to be 5.8 or something like that, and it's doubled.
Mm-hmm.
The planet is now resonating at twice the frequency that it did before.
Yeah, you're talking about the Schumann resonance?
Yes.
That particular modality. Yeah. And actually, that's one of the few kind of new age ideas that have been floated around that I think is not scientifically credible. That's just my opinion on it. It comes from Greg Braden, and I totally admire Greg Braden's work. But I just don't think that it has changed, but definitely the resonance of our species has shifted and has intensified for sure. In other words, you don't really need that to posit that we are resonating at a higher frequency all the time. And,
It
could be.
One of the many things that is coming by. I think the sun is changing in ways that I don't understand, but I know there are more solar flares than that. That's affecting us. But the whole solar system, every planet is having climate change and other effects, which are being tracked.
That's right.
So there's major things afoot.
Definitely.
Most people are, as we used to say where I grew up, doing their sidewalk act.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and then the other side of the coin here, too, is that while many of us are really changing and evolving and growing, there's also a lot of people who are just in horrendous crisis. And so in the middle of all this, all of us are also dealing with a lot of people who are very sick and a lot of death and a lot of trauma in society. So
yes.
it's a crazy time, but I've gone back to to all of the changes of the great ages every 2,000 years. And you always have to have this sort of stuff going on when there's a change of an age.
Because right. And the old guard, the old ways struggle to maintain their power.
Yeah, that's right. And see, the issue of the age of Pisces that we've been in for 2,200 years is religious control over people's minds. And so that's another reason why I got into this trilogy, is that I do feel that the power of the world religions is breaking down. Because as yes. we go into Aquarius, the emphasis is going to be for people to be able to contact divine forces and divine consciousness on their own. They don't need a priest and they don't need a church right. to do that.
Well, Pope Francis, to me, is a harbinger of tremendous change. Saying and doing the things that he's doing, which until his coming into being the Pope would not even have been spoken about. It would have been impossible to even conceive of a Pope making the kinds of changes in policy and consciousness and all the rest of it that he's doing. And I know that one of the threads in the book is the Vatican and the history of the Vatican, and there certainly is a lot of darkness in that history.
And particularly in the previous pope, Cardinal Ratzinger, who became Pope Benedict XVI, was a very, very dark pope. And he really, I mean, if he bothers to read this book, he's not going to be very happy. That's for sure.
Well, my guess is he's not very happy anyway.
No, I know. But the amazing thing is when he stepped down, a gigantic bolt of lightning struck the top of the Vatican. And so that's
really?
That's on the cover of the book. That's the reason there's a bolt of lightning going.
Oh,
that's a photograph.
Okay. That's what the illustration is.
Yeah, that's a photograph of what happened when Ratzinger stepped down. Yeah. So I'm really going after that one because I agree with you about Pope Francis, although I'm watching him, because just the sheer power of the Vatican, just like the presidency, it can tend to corrupt an individual.
Sure. Within all of that, I mean, he's doing that job in that institution, obviously.
Yeah.
But the kinds of things that he's focusing on and the way he's saying them and how he's bringing it into the world is just striking.
Yes, it is.
Such an extraordinary shift.
But let's talk about a specific one. This is where I'm watching him right now, because see, he's a character in the sequel to Revelations of the Ruby Crystal.
Okay.
So I'm watching him very carefully to see what he's doing. And when he comes to the United States, September 23rd, 24th, and 25th, he is planning to canonize Father Junipero Serra, who was the founder of the missions in California. In other words, he's planning... planning on making Serra a saint. And the problem with that is Serra was a terrible, terrible abusing... man who tortured the Indians in California and basically used them as slaves in order to found the missions. And so
right.
if Francis goes through with this, and by the way, there's a big movement, people are contacting Pope Francis like crazy, telling him how they feel about this, indigenous people, native people.
Right.
Because if he goes through with this, this is going to be in such direct contradiction to everything else that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I'm hoping, I'm putting all my energy and meditation into that he will see the light and not go forward with this, because it's a terrible blow to indigenous people in the United States, particularly the West Coast.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure people know how to find you online. So please give us your web address.
Okay, it's Hand Clow, that's my name there, HANDCLOW, 2012.com.
Fantastic.
So it's just the latter part of my name. Yeah, 2012, Hand Clow, 2012.com.
Fantastic. My guest tonight is Barbara Hand Clow. Her new book, which we'll be talking about after the break, is Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. And this is... This is our opportunity to be back shortly, unless we get taller, here on Empower Radio. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. Don't go nowhere. There's a whole lot more right after the break.
These days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over a million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home, where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg!
Ha ha, I win! Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Barbara Handclough, author of Revelations of the Ruby Crystal, which is a fascinating book. So tell us a little bit about how you came to put it together this way and all the different threads that you've woven into this.
That's an interesting question because it happened, at least as far as I'm concerned, in a really bizarre way. I was sitting in my office where I always write back in May of 2011. And I think you're aware that I've written books about the Pleiadians and channeling from the Pleiades. And I pick up information that the Pleiadians kind of incite me into getting out a yellow pad and a pen when they want to pass on some information. And they sometimes will pass on an incredible teaching, or they'll instruct my hand in how to draw a symbol that sometimes turns out later on to be a crop circle that appeared that day. There's all kinds of data that comes through, and I try to track it as best I can. And so I was inspired to write down a list of characters with their names and their age and their educational background and their professions, and a brief description of their appearance and personalities. And this was a list of about 11, 12, 13 characters.
Mm.
And I was really intrigued by that, David, because I love Anthony Trollope. He's a 19th century English writer. And Trollope wrote 60 novels, and all of them started that way. And so when that happened to me, I was really intrigued by it. So I told my husband about it. And immediately my husband was literally fascinated by these characters. I described, you know, who they were and what they looked like and their names and stuff. And he just looked at me, and he's never, by the way, I've written 15 books, and he's never said this to me before. He looked at me and he said, "You have to write that. You have to write that now." Before that, all of my boring, tendentious, you know, heavily researched, complex books were just pretty much a drag on everybody in the house. But on this one, he wanted me to write it, and he wanted to read it. And so because he reacted that way, I decided I would write it. But then how was I going to write it? I'd never written a novel, and I didn't know how to write a novel, although I love reading them. And so I just decided to take those characters and get them together and see what happened. And so I didn't plot the first book. I am plotting the second book at this point. But I didn't plot it. I just turned them all loose and let them do their thing. And then in the middle of this experience, one more character showed up, which was really interesting. One day I was sitting at my desk, and another character, Lorenzo Giannini, a Jungian analyst in Rome, showed up. And he presented himself in terms of who he was and background and all that kind of stuff, and he became a character in the book. And so they really seem to have appeared out of some dimension. I don't really know what dimension it is. And as long as I get out of the way when I'm writing it, it just flows. And so that's how this came in.
It's fascinating, and I got the giggles since one of the first characters is a Jewish boy from Brooklyn, which would describe my childhood. And I know many Italian girls from Boston.
Uh-huh.
So when as that dynamic unfolded, I was like,
yeah. And of course, that's a ploy in the beginning.
Sure.
You mentioned when I spoke to you earlier this issue of romantic fiction. This is not really romantic fiction. What happens is I'm using romance to get the widest range of readers, because everybody loves romance. And everybody seems to be responding immediately, right in the very first chapter, to this book. It seems to be easy for them to read. Because then as I get going, I'm bringing up some extremely complicated subject matter. And the question would be, why am I doing it in a novel instead of in a nonfiction work, especially since I've written so many of them? And the reason that I'm using the novelistic form is, first of all, it gives me the opportunity to take more liberties. And at this point, after all these years of research, I'm ready for that. And then it also gives me a range of voices who are discussing this material. So, for example, when we get into a discussion about the Mayan calendar, a fascinating woman intellectual who lives in Rome, Claudia Togliatti, and is an expert on the Mayan calendar. And then Simon, the character you're referring to, the Jewish boy from Brooklyn Heights, he is an extremely intellectual New York Times reporter, so he's got that good, sharp, intellectual brain. Another character is a really interesting, very deep painter, and we see a lot of the thought in this novel being expressed through art and through painting, which gives a fabric to the thought that we're working on that you just can't really get any other way.
Right.
And then Sarah, of course, is a researcher on early Christian history, going back to the time when the church first formed.
Well, I'm actually going to, if she's not actually listening to the show, I have a friend who will be on next week talking about her new book, Christina Rake. Mm-hmm. And she's a theologian that's read a tremendous amount of the first century Christian material in the original languages. So a lot of the stuff that you're referring to is juicy stuff for her. And I hope she reads it so we can talk about it together, because she has a totally different perspective on this stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I have some interesting friends.
Yeah, and see what I the reason this happened, also the reason this book is sitting there in your hand, is once I finished my master's in theology, and in this case I studied with Matthew Fox, then I wanted to get a PhD in patristics, which is early church study. But I had four children and a job at a publishing house, and I was writing a book every 2 years. And so I gave up getting a PhD, even though I very much wanted to. And so in this novel, Sarah Adamson, the main female character, she's getting her PhD in patristics, and that way I get to be satisfied anyway. You can create, it's really amazing to write fiction. You can create a person, and then they can go out and do something that you always wanted to do.
Interesting. You're giving me all kinds of ideas. I have books to write, but I've never written fiction, and I never considered it. So you're giving me things to think about.
Yeah, there's reasons for it, you know. And then also, I think sex is so misunderstood. And so this book is very sexual, and the two sequels will also be very deeply sexual books. And so that gives me the chance to play out some of my fantasies. I read someplace recently that some editor commented that the one thing you never want to do is publish a lady who's in her 70s.
Because you're dangerous.
Yeah, right. But I do think sex is very misunderstood. And I also think that this book is also a really good novelist is also going to be instructing their readers. And I am a very moral, ethical person. And so it's wonderful to create characters who have high ethics and high morals, because we're living in a time of such degeneration at this time.
Right. Well, my wisecrack comment, but it's the truth of my understanding, is I don't know anybody that understands sex. So saying that sex is misunderstood is, it seems to me, the human condition.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I think it probably is one of the places where we're really evolving at this time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling if you go over the history of humanity, I think that we're coming into a whole new place right now, but it's very, very difficult because it's such a difficult subject for people to handle.
Now, I know another thread in the story is the Vatican and the history of the Vatican. I don't want you to give us spoilers, but how does that play out in this?
Well, if I was going to pick one key topic, it would be the issue of how evil gets into the world. That's what's really behind the deepest aspects of this trilogy. And so in terms of the Vatican, I'm working with how evil gets into the world through the Catholic Church. And that's why a key topic in the book is priestly sexual abuse of children in the church.
Yep.
Because that is it's just really kind of hard to find anything more evil than that. And we're having an explosion of these kinds of forces on the planet. For example, some of the things that ISIS is doing to people in Syria and Iraq. And so I wanted to really explore the realm of the dark side and how the dark side penetrates people and how people can work with it at a higher level and not have their boundaries penetrated. And so there's a couple of amazing characters in the book. Simon's father, Simon is the Jewish boy from Brooklyn. And his father, David, is actually a Magus, by the way, this is a generational novel, too, where there's parents and children, which I think is always really interesting. And so his father is descended from Isaac Luria, who's a Jewish mystic and a master of the Kabbalah in the Middle Ages. And so his father is just a master of energy, and it was really, really fun to create a character who's that highly developed, because then we get insights into how the dark forces function on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this viewpoint through the Catholic Church, because the Catholic Church has been in the middle of just an explosion of really dark, evil behavior for the last 30 years. But by the way, it always has been. But I do think it's even greater in our times. And also, you can make the argument that the only thing that's going on now that's different is that now we're getting the truth, where before the truth was veiled from people's eyes. It could be that
right.
It's always been this.
Which is my perspective on a lot of this stuff. It was always a lot of the evil in the world was always going on and always working exactly the same way. But there's so much light on the planet, the transformation is already happening.
Yeah.
That those dark places are now filled with light and they can't hide.
Yeah, and I think you can make a very good case for that. And then what I'm interested in is just the psychology of a pope. So in mm-hmm. the first book, the key pope is Cardinal Ratzinger, who became Benedict XVI,
right.
who is a very, very dark pope. And now in the sequel that I'm working on now, of course, Francis is the pope. And it's really, really fascinating to explore Francis because since I'm writing fiction, I can explore the inner psyche of these individuals in order to, shed some light on what's going on with them. And I think that any man who puts that dolphin hat in his head, which is what the Pope wears, is just hit by such a force of energy that it must just be impossible to comprehend what's going on for them.
Yeah.
You know, it's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're in those buildings which were designed as power sources and power centers based on all the knowledge which basically has been lost about how to concentrate energy that way.
Well, so see, the way I look at that one is I don't think any of that knowledge is lost. I just think that the global elite and the religious power figures and people in power have taken the knowledge into themselves and they use it themselves. And then what they do is they debunk magic and they debunk astrology
right.
and they debunk
right.
energy, where that's what they do. They do it 24/7.
Right.
You know?
In which, of course, nobody really wants to think about dark magic being what's behind some of the craziness in the world.
Yeah.
But it's the only explanation for a number of things that have happened through modern history in particular.
Also, I'm exploring light magic too, because the other issue here is that magic and working with energy and working with shamanism can be such a positive force in your mm-hmm. life and in the life of the planet. So I'm just going over the whole spectrum.
Well, since a lot of the clearing work that I do is related to very dark forces and dark entities, and I have my perspective on how this stuff works in the world, I'm really looking forward to getting further into the book and reading your perspective on it. And maybe we'll have you back after I've finished it and we can kick that stuff around.
Yeah, and I'll be anxious to see what you think, because in this lifetime, I've tended to work only with more like light forces than dark forces.
Mm-hmm.
I have tremendous respect for people who do that, and one of the characters in the book is an expert at it, Claudia Togliatti. But I'm going to be really interested to see what you think.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I was already looking forward to getting all the way through the book, but now I have several other things that I'm interested in seeing where they go.
Yeah.
So, absolutely fascinating concept for a book. What often happens when books come in before somebody is interviewed is I don't get to read the whole book.
Oh, sure. It just came out 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, which I apologize for. But, wow, what a great concept. And the stuff that I've read so far is just wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Just wonderful. Very engaging from the first page. So I'm really looking forward to it, and I recommend it to people. The book is Revelations of the Ruby Crystal, and we're talking to Barbara Handclough. So what do you want to leave people with, besides the book's fascinating by it?
As we all know, one thing I'm sure that every person – can't agree on is that we are in the middle of a huge transition. And I've been a spiritual teacher and a writer and all that for at this point 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is really meant to help people go through this transition. I'm writing into the transition. Like right now, as I'm writing the sequel, I'm in 2015. And I'm just letting the events in the world come in relationship to what's unfolding inside me, which is what I did with the first book. Because we're in the middle of a monumental moment in time. And the more that each one of us has the opportunity to understand that and process it, the better off all of us are going to be. It's really an opportunity.
Absolutely. And there are certainly people that understand that and are learning about it in the many, many different ways that people approach all of this. And then there are people that are just struggling with all of it and don't have any idea that there's a bigger picture.
Yeah.
And that there's, you know, that this has been unfolding and known. Well, it's also, you know, it
and
gets
let me give you a good example of what people can miss, which they haven't missed because of Dan Brown. Dan Brown really brought it into the public eye, even though other writers had done so before him, the issue of whether Jesus was married or not. Mm-hmm. And this is a very, very big deal. Because if Jesus is a whole person and a father and a family man and all of those things, as well as whatever else he was, this gives a completely new understanding of a divine figure in people's minds. And if Dan Brown hadn't written his books, there's a whole lot of people who never would have even had the chance to think about that.
Right.
And, of course, I'm carrying that issue much further in the sequel, especially. I'm going deeply into
well,
the real
well, they're, truth. They're, yeah. There are two things about Jesus that always struck me. One is, as a rabbi and a teacher and a Jew in that time, it would be bizarre for him not to be married.
Impossible.
Basically, yeah, culturally impossible.
Yeah.
The other thing is, he, from my perspective, was a shaman of the divine feminine. Mm-hmm. All of his teachings were the feminine side of energy.
Yep.
And to run that much energy as a shaman and run the feminine energy that way, he needed a female shaman as powerful as he was.
Yep.
To keep himself from blowing up.
Yeah. No, it's true. And I could say the same about a lot of men that I've known, including my husband.
Right. Right. So I mean, the combination of the two, for me, make it totally clear that he was married and probably married to Mary Magdalene, who was a very, very powerful shaman.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But
and at this point, to tell you the truth, that's just virtually certain. But the only reason it's hidden from people is because it's coming through very scholarly sources and very complex sources. And so that's another reason I decided to write fiction, was to get these ideas to the general public, because the people need these ideas at this point and in order to understand themselves.
Right. Well, and the ideas are so startling and confrontational to most of the 42,000 or so Christian sects, that there would be tremendous resistance if it was just suddenly a conversation that was happening.
Yeah, and then there's a reason why something like that is hidden, you know, because it's used as a device to mind control the public. And,
right.
You know, so if people are going to wake up and not be mind controlled, they need to start considering some of these ideas.
Right. And it's going to be, you know, as who knows whether it really is a Chinese curse, but may you live in interesting times. And we certainly are here in interesting times.
Yeah.
And every time I complain about that, I am told, you volunteered. So, like, all right, yeah.
That's true. So one of the things I like to do is I really like to entertain. So this is one of the reasons the novel is entertaining. And
yes.
I even got my daughter Liz into it, who's an artist, and Liz did some beautiful illustrations for it. Because I really believe that entertainment and humor and beauty really draw people along very nicely.
Right. And it also helps them it uses a different part of the brain, so it shorts out the part that's sitting there judging everything and saying this is wrong and different and struggling with it. You make people laugh and they can hear all kinds of things that they wouldn't hear otherwise.
And then another thing, David, is that fiction, before we had television and media and all this kind of stuff, fiction was a way that people entertained themselves, and they used it in order to get out of their ordinary reality, which often was very boring and hardworking and things like that.
Right.
And people use fiction to go on a journey or to have an experience with a character that strikes their imagination. And I really think that it's a wonderful artistic form for people to enjoy, especially during a difficult age like this.
Right.
It's entertainment and enjoyment, and it also offers perspective.
Right. And certainly the major media and television have moved away from good fiction, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah.
There still is some, but a lot of it is what I call banality TV, reality TV.
Yeah.
Which has taken over mostly because it's really cheap to produce.
Yeah.
But there is fiction to it, but they try to make it seem like it's not. So anyway, this has been fascinating, Barbara, and I feel like I've made a new friend. I hope we can keep in touch. There's a whole conversation there about how evil enters the world, which is not most people's conversation, but I'm glad we'll be able to have it. So I hope you'll be able to come back on the show.
Well, I'd love to. And as I told you when I first spoke to you, I thought that it, when I looked up your show, that you were just working with helping people sell their houses. And my house is...
No, so there's a lot more going on.
Got my attention, but now I can see there's a whole big thing going on here. But it just caught my attention. I thought, how funny, what a wonderful coincidence, synchronicity.
Yep. Well, we can talk about that. Stay on after we go off the air. My guest tonight is Barbara Handclaw. Her new book is Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. And please check that out online and consider buying that. And please give us your website again.
Okay, it's handclow, HANDCLOW, 2012.com.
Fantastic. Thank you, Barbara. And if you got curious about this guy, David, and what in the world does he do, you can go to househealing.com. And cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including a scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment of whatever is going on with a person, place, situation, and how my work might be helpful. If you want more about the show, you can go to thefarkasfiles.com. We have 4.5 years of interviews with fascinating people. Also, Empower Radio is 24/7 positive conversations, amazing shows. My show is just one of the shows that are on all the time. And Empower Radio has... we're on the cusp of releasing a new app for smartphones. And that's going to make it much, much easier for you to listen to my show and all the other shows anywhere, anytime. So go to empowerradio.com and check that out. We are also on all the streaming media, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes podcasts. So whatever you are using to listen to media and radio and all the other stuff, we're there. So search for Empower Radio or the Farkas Files and you can listen to us anytime. Just want to, for a moment, go back to talking about the weather, which seems like such a mundane thing. But in the world of, in the perspective of a shaman, everything is conscious and everything is communicating with you and you can communicate with it. So as you go back to what is it about the weather that really makes you happy, have a conversation with it. Say hello. Say thank you. And see what happens. because at the point at which you get answers and you realize that there really is a communication, everything changes. And I look forward to you being able to do that, because it really changes the whole world when you realize that there is communication with everything and everything is conscious. So, again, thank you so much for taking some time with me this week. Wherever you are, whenever you are, whatever part of the world, however you're tuning in, it's very exciting that we now have the technology that allows people to, at their convenience, wherever they are, listen to my show and other shows. It's a wonderful thing. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.